The show that takes you home. The Home Stretch with Sterling Holmes on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, and the ESPN Kansas City Facebook page.
Welcome to the Home Stretch, ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com, and Facebook Live. Live in studio on a cloudy Thursday afternoon. Hopefully this rain that keeps saying is going to rain and then doesn't, and then it does rain, but I'm not paying attention, doesn't happen on Saturday. I'm hitting the link Saturday. If it rains Saturday, the one day it's supposed to be sunny, I will be irate. I will be livid. But what does not make me irate, what does not make me livid, is David Leske. David Leske from Inside the Crown joining us right now. Leske, how you doing?
Well, look, if it rains on Saturday, but that means that Thursday is dry, you need to take one for the team.
No, yeah. I will not. Leske, I'm okay, a selfish person. Okay, I'm a selfish person. You should know this by now. If my golf game, I can't play when it's wet. I can't play when it rains.
You can't play when it's dry.
Okay, besides the point, Leske. I know this.
I've never golfed with you before, so I don't know. But I assume you're terrible.
Well, I'm not. Okay, I'm a 14 handicap. I'm not great. There's your little range for you.
14 handicap? Wow.
Yeah, 14. Not great.
Oh, 14, not 140. Okay.
Yeah. Come
you're
on.
You're describing my golf game, Mr. Leske. That sounds more like me.
Mr. Leske.
I don't have a handicap because I haven't golfed in, I'm not going to say how long.
Oh, and you're talking smack to me, Leske.
Yes. That's what I do.
Oh, man. All right. What you guys.
This isn't new.
Okay, I'm just going to say what you guys should do, since I'm actually a nice human being, is go to Inside the Crown and make sure you subscribe. He's actually giving 25% off forever. If you don't do this, you're leaving money on the table. Go. You're going to want this. It gets emailed directly to your email. You can read while you're drinking coffee in the morning or while you're taking your bubble bath. It is very nice.
You read while you're searching for your ball in the bushes.
Leske, come on. Come on. I'm trying to give you a compliment, and you're still finding ways to bring me down.
Hey, it's not in the water. Isn't that a compliment?
Yeah, it's not in the water.
Dry land?
It's not in the water. But I will say, if you subscribe now, you're eligible for giveaways, including opening day tickets, as well as giveaways all year long. 25% off now through April 2nd. I've already subscribed. You've over 4,000-plus subscribers already. So join the conversation Inside the Crown. Leske, how are you doing, man? What are you feeling like right now that World Baseball Classic is over?
It's funny because, you know, every year spring training is it's too long. And I don't think it's too long for the pitchers, but it's too long for fans, and it's definitely too long for hitters. I mean, they're good to go. But when the World Baseball Classic comes around, there's the dog days of spring, are at least partially taken up by that. And it's funny because it's been 6 years since the last one, but every few years when it comes around, you think, oh, this is the best one yet. They've all been good. I mean, it's a good tournament. It really is. And it helps to take your mind off the fact that you're done with spring training. And here we are, it's over, it's March 24th. And I'm like, can it be March 30th, please? Because I'm done with spring training. I'm bored of it. I mean, I'll watch them play. But I'm tired of it. I just want to see real baseball. I want to see regular season baseball happen.
But before we get to the Royals' perspective on the World Baseball Classic, what was your takeaway of Shohei Ohtani striking out Mike Trout? Because I thought it was incredible. You look at the numbers on Twitter. You look at the eyeballs who watched the World Baseball Classic. I know some people are sitting here saying, what's the point? You're seeing major superstars in Major League Baseball get injured. You saw Edwin Diaz, for example. He should be out for this season. You're seeing injuries pile up. I think Adam Wainwright also got hurt as far as Team USA goes.
Well, he got hurt lifting weights.
Sure, but my point is, this is not just Major League Baseball. This is a worldwide situation where you have so many eyeballs watching, and you'll never probably see a situation where you're going to see teammates go up against each other with their entire countries behind them supporting them. I think it's really cool to see, just Japan and all these other countries have this major backing. I don't know what your thoughts were, but I thought that was really fun to watch.
yeah, it was incredible. And, you know, to the point of injuries, like Rhys Hoskins, I don't know if you saw what happened to him today. It's a regular spring training game. And now, if it's what it looks like, I haven't seen the report yet, he's out for the year probably. So he didn't play in the WBC. Injuries happen is the point. But, yeah, it's boy, that last at bat. Man, yeah. That was incredible. Just to watch. I mean, it had to be a 3-2 count, of course. Like, yeah. It was ridiculous. And I think it showed, you know, the last, like, two games with Japan. And, you know, that ninth inning, Shohei Ohtani doubled the leadoff in when they were down, was it, I think it was 5-4, right? Yeah. The look on his face was just, hey, we're not losing this game. Yeah. And I'm going to make sure that I at least get this thing tied. And he doubled, and he obviously scored the tying run, and the winning run was behind him. But that was just great drama. You couldn't have asked for more, I don't think, for the game of baseball. And you see, I forget who it was now, it was a hockey player was talking about it. When's the last time a hockey player was talking about baseball? I'm sure that privately they have, but like you don't hear that in like I don't know if it's pre or post game, but you don't hear that in an interview in the locker room. A hockey player talking about baseball. It was just great for the sport.
It also puts in perspective how bad the rest of the Angels are. They have maybe the two best players in the entire baseball world, and they're lucky to get 500. They're lucky to be around 500. So that just also puts in perspective.
The Angels are so interesting, too, because this year, I don't know, the roster looks a lot better this year. They've had some help, but they got to stay healthy. But it's always, I was like, why aren't they better? They've got the two of the best players, if not the two best players, I would probably argue the two best players. You know, Anthony Rendon, although he's been hurt, their pitching was actually pretty good last year. Like, it doesn't make any sense, but I'm just glad Trout got to have a meaningful at bat. And so he's come up short in two meaningful at bats in his career.
Yeah.
The 2014 playoffs and strikeout.
Yeah. When you get two major opportunities and that's what you're left with, I would argue to say too small of a sample size, but yet you see some of the talking heads on national media saying it's all done. Mike Trout isn't that guy. And you just have to sit back and laugh. Trust me, I'm not taking advice from someone who hasn't watched baseball since 1974. But let's move on. We have baseball coming up very soon. And David Lesky is joining us right here, Homestretch ESPN Kansas City. Let's start first with your final roster prediction, and that's with the position players. Again, if you are subscribed, you would have got this sent to your email. He wrote this on March 21st, just 2 days ago. Again, make sure you subscribe. 25% off now until April 2nd. But we're 9 days, or what are we now? 7 days away from opening day.
Seven.
Seven. If you count today, right?
Yeah.
7 days.
You know what? I started writing tomorrow's article, and so I write it as, you know, you get it.
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
Yeah.
So what you have is Salvador Perez. You originally had Freddie Fermin, but then he was actually optioned yesterday. Where does this open up as far as the catching spot with just Salvi being here? Is it MJ Melendez? Is he going to be the main backup? Is he going to be a left field mostly to start the season? What do you see?
Yeah, I think Melendez might be right field, which is interesting because played a lot of left field last season, and then all he's done in spring when he's been in the outfield has been right field. I think maybe he's got a few innings in left, but I can't remember if he has. He played all right field in the WBC. I don't know that he's, this doesn't really matter. He's a corner. But I think he's going to be the backup catcher too. And I know he is, unless there's a move up their sleeve and maybe I don't think they're going to add a guy like Jose Briseño to the 40-man roster, although he has opened up a lot of eyes this spring. But, I think really what that does is it opens up another spot for somebody. Is that Jackie Bradley Jr.? Maybe. He's leading off today. Is it one of Matt Beatty or Matt Duffy? I think Beatty makes the team. Maybe Duffy does now, too, as a utility infielder. I don't know. I don't know who, you know, maybe it's somebody we haven't even thought of. I can't really think of who it could be other than that group because of the roster limitations. You can't have more than 13 pitchers. So they're going to obviously have 13 position players and 13 pitchers. So It's interesting, the decision. I imagine there will be times throughout the year that Fermin is up, and they'll carry, I would say, 2.5 catchers, if you call Melendez half a catcher. So it's interesting, the decision they made there, just because it's not what I expected. And not what a lot of people expect, I think.
Yeah. Going to first base, you have Vinny Pascantino. That seems to be a lock. You used the steamer projections as far as what it's going to look like. One, how did you think his steamer projections look? And two, how close is Nick Prado to being ready?
So with projections, and it's every projection, Coda, Zip, Steamer, all of them, they're all conservative. They all err toward the middle. And so that I say it that way because bad players are going to look better than you expect. And the great players are not going to look as good as you'd expect. Generally, teams are projected to win between 73 and 94 games. Well, there's a lot of teams that win fewer than 73 and a lot that win more than 94. So stuff like that is important to keep in mind. Vinny Pascantino, the numbers for him, I thought they were low. In some ways, I thought the slash stats were low, but the weighted runs created plus, I think it was 135, is that right? That's probably about right. He had a really nice season last year, nice half season. Now he's going to be in his first full year. He's kind of struggling a bit through spring, but struggled in WBC, struggled in his first game back, although he's at the plate as we speak right now in spring training. But I expect him to be a top 25 to 30 hitter in baseball this year.
Mm. So you're saying draft him in fantasy baseball?
See, I don't play fantasy baseball because I'm terrible at it, which is people are always shocked by that. And I'm like, no, I think too much about this. But I haven't looked around to see who the first base eligible, who's the first baseman are in fantasy. Generally, it's going to be a hitter-heavy position. So Pascantino doesn't provide a lot more outside of the hit tool. He's not going to run the base as well. Especially, I mean, you're not going to get steals or anything from him, but he just grabbed in double play. But, or no, I guess he's safe. Steelers choice, whatever. Either way, yes, draft him in fantasy. You're going to get some hits.
with Nick Prado, do you think he's close? Maybe still overhyping him based on where he was drafted. Is some of it in his head? Because it felt like at times looking at him last year, it seemed like he was in his dome. Even Steamer, just for perspective here for those listening, has Pascantino's K rate at 13.9%. Nick Prado's is 31.4%. What do you think of him?
He's so interesting. I don't know. Nick Prado knows the strike zone probably as well as anybody in baseball. I mean, I suppose you could say Juan Soto knows it better. You know, I would put he's upper echelon. Let's just say that. I think sometimes he needs to swing a little more. I think he gets himself into deep counts because he refuses to swing the bat on pitches that are not exactly where he wants them, and then what ends up happening is it's 1-2, and oh, here we go. And I think he does have a lot of swing and miss. Salvi just hit a bomb, by the way.
Hell yes. Some things never change. Death,
no, never.
Taxes, and Salvi hitting bombs.
And him hitting bombs while we're talking. And I can give probably illegal play-by-play over
there. Also, Leslie, just so you know, whenever Salvi's up, we're going to hop on the radio opening
perfect.
Day throughout the season. That's going to be our game plan.
That's perfect. I'm in. But yeah, with Prado, he gets himself into bad situations by not swinging enough. And he has to swing and miss. And so when he gets to two strikes, what's going to happen? He's going to swing and miss a lot. So he's always going to be a guy who strikes out. But he needs that 12 to 14% walk rate because he's probably going to be top out it. I mean, I don't see a lot of 280, 290 seasons for him in the big leagues. But I think he can be productive. I don't think that means that he can't succeed in the big leagues. The Royals want to see him strike out less. It's as simple as that. They want to see him make more contact. A lot of guys they're looking at, they're like, hey, be a little bit less aggressive. You know, take some pitches. Let's see. and Prado, they're probably like, hey, you can swing the bat. Do it. If you can make contact with a pitch, make contact and hit it. It's okay to hit a single. I know you're wanting to hit a home run, but it's okay to get a single sometimes. So I think that's going to be his marching orders, and that's why he's in AAA to start the year at least. And you know, see where it goes for them from there.
On Hunter Dozier, I saw he was a late scratch. I didn't see the reason why. I don't know if you have any insight there, but why was Hunter Dozier a late scratch today?
Ian Rogers tweeted he took a ball off his lip in batting practice.
Brutal. So, I've done that before.
I'll tell you a quick story. I did that in I can't remember what grade it was now. I had braces.
Oh.
My lips stuck to my braces.
Yep.
Had to rush to the dentist. There was a lot of swelling, a lot of blood. So at least he doesn't have braces.
Dude, Lesky, I did that playing basketball. I took a charge. Some dude's knee hit my braces and my lip. It got caught. We were wearing white jerseys because we were the home team. And
you weren't wearing white anymore.
I was not. I'm a very competitive person.
He was wearing 55 the rest of the game.
I kind of ripped my lip because I was like, what do you do? You kind of just rip it. That was not the right decision. So
no.
So I feel for you, and I feel for Hunter Dozier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It doesn't sound great. It's funny because I saw that. I saw he was scratched.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, Rhys Hoskins, that seems like a fit if you're going to move Hunter Dozier. But no, he's just hurt.
So Michael Massey is at second base in your article. You have Hunter Dozier at third. You have, obviously, Bobby Witt Jr. at shortstop. And then the utility infielder, you have Nicky Lopez. Give us a little breakdown here and if there's any guy that's knocking on the door.
Well, I mean, Michael Garcia is the obvious answer because he was competing to win a roster spot on opening day. I think he faced an uphill battle, a pretty uphill battle. But he had a shot, at least, and he played pretty well. I think that ultimately he's a guy I've gotten mixed opinions on him. Some people believe he is a rock-solid everyday shortstop for 8 to 10 years, and some people believe he's a utility guy. And the Royals, they have a luxury right now. They've got Bobby Witt at short. They've got Nicky Lopez behind him. They want to get Michael Garcia some time in AAA, some time playing other positions because maybe they want to prepare for him to be a utility guy. They had that luxury right now. And so he's the guy knocking on the door. It's interesting because is Bobby Witt a shortstop? I don't know. I don't know the answer. I don't think the Royals know the answer. I don't think Bobby Witt knows the answer right now. They're going to find out. And that's what 2023 is about, is finding stuff out like that. And so if Witt's a shortstop, then Garcia either has to, if he's good enough to play every day, he's going to play third. If he's not, he's probably going to be a utility guy. And if Bobby Witt can't play shortstop every day, then maybe Garcia is the everyday shortstop moving forward. But that's what they'll find out this year.
When it comes to Michael Massey, how convinced are you he's the answer at second base, especially over Nicky Lopez?
I'm sold. I love Massey. I think that he is kind of the anti-Prado because he probably needs to be a little less aggressive. But I think he's got big enough power. Kauffman Stadium suppresses it quite a bit. I don't know if you've ever looked at the Baseball Savant expected home runs by park. But it's funny looking at Massey because in Kansas City he had 3 expected home runs. It meant that every game is played in that home park.
Yeah.
He would have had 15 in Cincinnati. So a little different. I think he's got good enough gap power that he can really take advantage of Kauffman Stadium. He's a bit limited defensively. He catches what he gets to. His range isn't wonderful. His arm isn't wonderful, but the shift restrictions actually help him quite a bit because they don't put him out in short right field anymore. I don't know if you're talking about, he's a guy you signed for 7 years and $75 million. But I think he's an answer, at least in the short, long term, I will call it. Mm. The next 3 to 5 years, I think you can put Michael Massey at second base and feel good about that. Now, I think that there are other guys who could play. I mean, Samad Taylor is right behind him. There's Nick Lofton who could potentially be there. Garcia is another option at second. He hasn't played there, but he could. But I really like Massey. I'll probably have something on this next week, but I feel like he's a guy who can swing the Royals lineup from top heavy to deep because he's probably – I don't really see a way he hits in the top half, top five. So, you know, he's 6'7", somewhere in there. If he's good, him in the bottom half of the order makes the lineup good. If he's not good, it probably means it's top heavy again. Not quite like it was last season, but still pretty, you know, I think they need him to be good to have a good deep lineup.
Yeah. I get what you're saying. That's a lot of pressure on a young second baseman, but someone has to have it.
It's still the bottom of the order.
Sure.
You know, it's not like he's being asked to hit third.
Correct. Correct. Before we get to the outfield, Dylan has a betting question, as he likes to do.
Of course. Now, first five season is upon us, David, and that is my favorite bets to make, because you don't have to worry about a manager screwing up the bullpen late in the game and just craziness happen. All you have to do is bet on starters and kind of the first couple times through the lineup. My team last year was the Astros. That was the biggest wagon you could hop on with all the starters.
Framber Valdez, baby.
Go down the list with the lineup. But they kind of, I mean, Verlander was great. He was basically, if I saw his name on the thing, I'm taking him. Who is that team for me this year? Who is going to be? Because I want to say it's the Mets because they have Verlander, but they lost to Grom. And now their closer, which I guess that doesn't really matter with first five. So what do you think? Who is going to be a team that I can hitch my wagon to and make some money on?
I mean, there are some options out there. The Mets are a good one. The Braves, actually, I feel like I'm just going to say the whole AL East right now. In my head, I'm like,
I wouldn't blame you.
The Braves are good. The Mets are good. The Phillies are good. The Marlins are good. Okay, so the AL East, or the NL East, except for the Nationals.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, the Astros are obviously still a good choice. I think the Angels are kind of a sneaky good pick there, too.
That's what I wanted, was the sneaky one.
Are the Chargers going to be good this year in football, too? Or what's your take there, Leslie, because you're starting to get there?
Look, the Angels are a good first five pick. I didn't think they were going to win the World Series.
He's actually not wrong. The they were great last year.
But, yeah, I mean, the Angels pitching is surprisingly good. And then, I mean, look, you go to the obvious, the Guardians are always there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that they're always a possibility. I think the Yankees at some point, like their rotation, Garrett Cole, Carlos Rodon, Nestor Cortez. I mean, there's some injuries, so who knows what it'll look like, but Luis Severino, I think that they're kind of under the radar in a weird way too. So there's a few options.
Going to the outfield now, Edward Olivares, Kyle Isbell, MJ Melendez, who's going to be splitting time backing up Salvador Perez, and then Nate Eaton. Those are the four you are going with. You have next up as Jackie Bradley Jr., Tyler Gentry, and then Drew Waters whenever he comes back from his injury. Are you sold on these four?
No. Isbell's going to be there. Melendez is going to be there. Pretty sure Nate Eaton's going to be there. Edward Olivares has very quietly had a bad spring. Mm-hmm. He's not a good defender. He has never been a good defender. But he's hit. Well, he's not hitting this spring. He's not been terrible, but he's not been good. And they signed Jackie Bradley Jr., who he's, I think, 7 for 21 now, if I'm remembering. If I'm looking at the – I'm picturing the stats in my head. I think two doubles, so he hasn't walked. He's not striking out a ton, but he's still a good defender. I would not be surprised if they option Olivares and end up with Jackie Bradley on the roster. Where it gets interesting, though, is their 40-man roster is full. Jake Brent was re-signed recently, and he is on the 40-man right now. But he'll
how many left-handed relievers do the Royals...
Brent isn't going to pitch this year. At least not until late in the year, because he's recovering from Tommy John. So he's going to go on the 60-day. They gave him a 2-year deal, so they have him for next season, which I think is a good move.
Sure.
And Diego Hernandez, who got hurt a few weeks ago in spring training, we saw it on TV, he's going to go on the 60-day probably at some point. So that's two spots open. The Bray Singers threw a very nasty slider to Manny Machado. It's difficult to find a third spot without a trade. I don't think they're going to DFA anybody at this point. I also think that they could make an argument for a few pitchers who are non-roster guys. So I think it might be tough to get Jackie Bradley on the roster because we haven't gotten him, but Framil Reyes, Matt Beatty, Matt Duffy, we talked about those two already. I mean, that's already three guys. Maybe out of fourth, you're having to open up four roster spots. And I can only find two really easily. So I'm not 100% sold on what I have, but I also don't know how they get to a different solution.
Yeah.
Which is just, it's kind of the internal struggle I had.
Yeah. Let's take a look at the rotation because knowing us, Lesky, like we always do, we went long on the lineup because it's fun. We want to talk about bombs. We want to talk about the boys in blue hitting bombs. We also like alliteration. But the rotation you have now is the same starting five you projected before camp started. So congratulations. Good for you. Sticking by your convictions. Zach Greinke, Brady Singer, Jordan Lyles, Brad Keller, and Daniel Lynch. What do you think of these five?
Yeah, better stay healthy because there is not a lot of depth behind them, and that'll change. You know, right now, Chris Bubich isn't quite built up. He started camp a little bit late. Ryan Yarbrough is not quite built up. He started camp a little bit late. Jonathan Heasley, if you want to talk about a DFA candidate, his spring, you don't want to put a lot in spring, but he gave up, was it 18 runs and 9 1/3 innings before he got optioned? I mean,
brutal.
23 hits. It's bad. I've never been a huge Heasley fan, but woof. So he's not really there right now as depth. There's clearly something he's got to fix. Coar is in the bullpen now.
Is that permanent, do you think? Do you think Jackson Coar in the...
I don't know if it's permanent, but I think it might be. I think it might make sense. The way the game is going, if he can be a 2-3 inning reliever 2 or 3 times a week and be good at that, I think there's a role for that in the big leagues for a long time. Not easy. So I don't want to say, oh, this is just the obvious solution and done. But, you know, it might be his path. But as of right now, there's just not a lot of depth behind these guys. I think that, I mean, Bubich will be built up like 2 weeks after the season. So it's not going to be forever. And then Jonathan Bolin's the guy who could come on. Alec Marsh got to AAA last season. Asa Lacy's just kind of hanging out there. Who knows? I'm not saying I have any hope for him, but also, like, there's that 5-10% in me that looks at him and goes, well, he's still got the stuff. I mean, if he can throw strikes, who knows? And I'm not counting on it.
Have you heard anything about him? Nothing? Okay.
I haven't heard a word. I've talked to, 3 or 4 different scouts this spring. A couple who have seen a lot of this team. One guy in particular is focused on AL Central, who I'll talk to a few times, and that's why he's seen so much of the Royals, especially, Royals, Guardians, Royals, White Sox team. That's what he's going to be. It kills 2 birds with 1 stone. But I haven't heard a word about Asa Lacy. And he obviously hasn't pitched in a big league game. So if you're not on the backfield at the right time, you miss him. But I haven't heard a single thing other than that he's there, which I guess is a good thing.
Yeah, I'm wondering if some of the new philosophies and the change, in pitching coaches in general, if any of this will have any sort of effect or if it truthfully is just all between the dome. It kind of seems a little Rick Ankiel-esque, the Chuck Knobloch stuff, the John Lester not being able to throw a pickoff, but you never know if you can find some guy that can break through to him. I know Barry Zito had some of his issues as well, and eventually he found a way to break through. Obviously, it just takes one person. Hopefully the Royals can find that person. Because, like you mentioned, the talent, there's a reason why he was drafted where he was drafted. The talent is undeniable. Taking a look at the bullpen, you have Scott Barlow, Aroldis Chapman, Dylan Coleman, Josh Staumont, Amir Garrett, Carlos Hernandez, Lovelady, and then Yarbrough. Obviously, Yarbrough, Lovelady, Garrett, and Aroldis Chapman, 4 lefties. This bullpen actually looks pretty darn good.
Yeah, and the next 8 looks pretty good, too. The Royals very clearly, they said, hey, our starting might be a weakness, but we're going to make the bullpen really deep. And they did. And that didn't even include, they traded the Michael A. Taylor deal. They got back Evan Sisk. He's not on the roster. He doesn't have a great spring. He's not quite ready, but he should be soon. I mean, he's a guy. And then you start to think about guys like Bubich and Coar, who I have on that next 8 list. And gosh, maybe even Jonathan Heasley. Maybe that's the answer. Because we heard a lot in the minors, him pumping upper 90s with that nasty curve. know, maybe he's a reliever. Maybe that's how you get the most out of him. I don't know. I hate to call them failed starters because that implies that it's a bad thing. Relief pitchers are so important now that failed starter just means you're useful in another way if you're a good reliever. But I think they have a chance to have one of the better bullpens out there. And what I really like is that if Josh Dama, let's use him, he gets hurt again or if he struggles for whatever reason and isn't the guy you want, okay, go get somebody else. There are so many guys who you can pull up. I mean, Josh Taylor is somebody they got for Mondesi from the Red Sox. I mean, he had like a 47% whiff rate on his slider in 2021. He didn't pitch last year in the big leagues, but because of an injury, not because he was demoted. But he's a guy on the outside looking in. I have Taylor Clark optioned on this list, and I don't know that he will be. But I've said this before. There were times last season that Taylor Clark was the Royals' second best reliever, and I had a really tough time finding a spot for him on the big league roster. Some of that's that he started camp late, also because of an injury. But some of it is just that they have a lot of guys. So I think it's going to be a good bullpen.
Is there any chance of flipping these guys at the deadline? I'm just going to go out on a limb here and say you don't think the Royals are making a push for the playoffs this year. Is having all this depth at bullpen, I know you don't typically get a whole bunch back in return, but I know a guy like Scott Barlow, right, team control, he has the experience closing. We thought potentially last year could have been a chance to see him on the move, yet he stays around. With the bullpen being as deep as it is, do you see any of these guys being traded at the deadline? Obviously, I think Chapman's probably the first name that comes to mind.
Yeah, I think Chapman, if these guys are pitching well, I think I'd be a little bit surprised if Chapman's not moved, if Amir Garrett isn't moved. Josh Dalmont feels like a guy that should be traded if he's pitching well, given the ups and downs. Barlow's an obvious answer. I'm not sure. I think they would move him. I don't know. I feel like they should have last year, but yeah, everybody says they didn't make a change at GM because JJ was the GM last year. They did, though. I mean, Dayton's not over his shoulder now.
Yeah.
So I don't know that we necessarily got a great look at what JJ Piccolo will do as a GM last season at the deadline. But I don't think they're going to trade Dylan Coleman. Taylor Clark is another guy who could be moved if he gets some meaningful innings. I don't think they'll trade Lovelady. I don't think they'll trade Carlos Hernandez. I'm struggling to find other guys they wouldn't trade. It could be if they're way out of it at the deadline, which they probably will be. I mean, they'll probably be at least 10 games out. They could have a bad bullpen in August and September. I think it's very possible because they've moved everybody away. But, again, there's a lot of depth. There's a lot of depth to pull from when they do make those moves.
Before I let you go, I want to touch really quickly just back on the rotation because this, to me, seems like the weakness of this team. Yeah. This is obviously what's going to probably hold them back. Again, I'm not saying the Royals don't have any chance of a wild card, but I do think it's slightly far-fetched, and I think a lot of that falls on the shoulders of the rotation. How much variance is there in the rotation? Is there a chance they could be good? Because I'm just having a hard time thinking Zach Greinke all of a sudden is going to bounce back and throw up a 2-7. I have a hard time seeing Jordan Lyles doing anything other than what he's shown us he is, which is a high 4, low 5 ERA pitcher. Brad Keller kind of in the same vein. I guess final takeaways on the rotation and how much they hold this team back.
So I think Jordan Lyles is the guy to look at because it's kind of like, in a weird way, it's kind of like Massey. If Jordan Lyles has a season like he did last year, so like 4-4-ish ERA, not a ton of walks, innings, all that, if he is their fourth or fifth best starter with those numbers, this could be a good rotation. I mean, that will mean it's a good rotation. If he has those numbers and he's their second best starter, I enjoy going out for fireworks, I guess, on Fridays because they're not going to win games. It's just they're not going to win enough games to matter. But Brady Singer, I think you feel good about him.
Yes.
I think you should, at least.
I feel very good. I'm very, very bullish on Brady Singer. I think last year was not a fluke, not at all. You look at some of the underlying numbers. I mean, he was competing with, like, Shane McClanahan at times. Like, he looks like a legitimate piece.
Yeah, I mean, look at the Yankees game, the Dodgers game, all that. Yes, absolutely. Daniel Lynch, he's really more the difference maker than Lyles. But I think Lyles is kind of the measuring stick of this rotation. But, like, Lynch, if he can figure some stuff out, and he had some really interesting comments on the broadcast on Tuesday night when they were on TV. He could, you know, if he needs to take, like, three steps forward. Zach Greinke, he's not going to be a 2-7 guy, but I think he can do what he did last year. Maybe a little bit worse. Brad Keller, they're all keys, obviously. There's only five of them. So you can't have one just completely tank and feel good about it. But, you know, Keller looks as good as he's looked this spring. His last start wasn't great, but, you know, whatever. There's a chance that this rotation is pretty solid. I don't know that they're ever going to get to, like, top five, but they could. If they're the ninth best rotation in the American League, I think the bullpen is good enough that they'll win a few more games than you expect.
I lied. Final thought on Brad Keller, just because you were very in the know when you were down there. You've heard from some scouts that basically said that new pitch, that sweeper and everything, could revitalize and save Brad Keller's career. Yet some of the numbers we have seen, some of the starts we have seen, we're sitting here wondering, are we sure? Where do you land on Brad Keller? Because it feels like it's a very polarizing two ends of the spectrum here.
Yeah, the little that I've seen of him, because I've only seen him on television, you know, spring training is difficult, especially when you can't get down there, and I couldn't get down there this year. So that's tough. But the little I've seen of him, he looks different. He is on the attack. I think he's lost some weight, by the way, which I know people laugh at the best shape of his life stories. I think Brad Keller is thinner. I really do, and I think he needed to lose a few pounds. I do, too. I'm just not a major league pitcher, so nobody cares.
I care, Lesky. You and me, we're going on runs, baby.
Oh, fine. Come pick me up. But I liked the way he's looked. And what I keep hearing is if the sweeper is as good as it's looked a lot of the time, he can pitch and he can be a good big league pitcher. And, you know, one scout I talked to said, I don't know if it's bullpen or rotation, but I'm sold on him as a big leaguer again. And one said, I'm sold on the rotation. So we'll see. I mean, a lot of stuff is easy to look good in Arizona. I know pitching is tough there because there's a lot of reasons that the pitching is difficult in Arizona. But it's also really easy to, you're out of the spotlight. I mean, think about it. We've seen them play. They've been on television like seven times this spring. You know, there's not a whole lot of scrutiny. They also, the Royals have one beat writer across all their platforms. So there's not a lot of scrutiny on this team right now. It's really easy to do well in that situation. We'll see how it goes. But, I'm bullish on Keller, I would say.
David Lesky, make sure you follow him on Twitter at DB Lesky. Make sure you go to Inside the Crown and make sure you upgrade to paid before Monday. He will be selecting a winner for opening day tickets with parking. Then please pick me. Remember, it's 25% off through April 2nd. Only paid subscribers can comment when you go to Inside the Crown. It's like $27 right now for the entire year. You get incredible content cultivated, delivered right to your mailbox. It's again, if you're not doing it, you're not a real Royals fan.
Help me pay for daycare. That's the plan.
Help David pay for daycare. Do you hate David's kid? If you don't go right now, it sounds like you're not a fan of Lesky's kid. And I, for one, will not stand for that, Lesky, okay? I'm doing what I can.
Daughter, I hate you.
David Lesky, again, follow on Twitter and go to Inside the Crown. We'll take a quick break. Come back. Home stretch here, ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back to the home stretch, ESPN Kansas City. Thank you to David Lusky. Please go to Inside the Crown. I'm telling you right now, you will not find better Royals coverage. I became a member. I encourage all of you to become a member. It's $27 for the full year. Support him. Support his kid. Plus his great content. All right. College basketball time. One local team still in the tournament. Was it a team that had a chance to play a 15 seed? Was it the team that won the national title last year? Or was it the team with a brand new head coach? A team with some transfers who was picked to be in the cellar of the Big 12. It's purple, baby. Emaw. K-State. Now, it's tough for me. I'm a Mizzou guy to say Emaw and go K-State, but they are the local team still in the tournament, and it's you can see I'm wearing purple right now. I'm rocking a purple dress shirt just for the Wildcats and the fact my girlfriend went to K-State, okay? I'm not saying I'm whipped or anything, but, you know what it's like, Dylan. Come on. You got to support what your significant other also supports. If she went to Kansas, might be a different story. But K-State has been outstanding all season long. They've been such a joy to watch. Marcus Noel, in the words of Calipari, the little guy, has been dicing up players all season long. He's such a joy to watch. I mean, Marcus Noel is so talented. He really is a legitimate game-changing point guard. He's 5'8", 5'9", but it's not just what he does. Does he hit the big shots? Yes. Does he take the big shots? Yes. Does he sometimes take shots where you're sitting back saying, what the hell are you doing? Yeah, and then next thing you know, it's splash.
Yeah, that logo three that he took other game.
He takes like three a game, and every time you're sitting, what are you doing? And the next thing you know, it's bang!
Do you think it's acceptable as a Mizzou and Kansas fan to join this bandwagon?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's fine.
I think so, too.
The local flavor.
That's why I was
rooting
on him.
It's the local flavor. I'm rooting K-State. I'm rooting Jerome Tang. I think Jerome Tang deserves to be Coach of the Year. He's done a phenomenal job flipping K-State from, again, a poor team to a legitimate Final Four contender. If you look at what their schedule looks like, you don't ever look ahead, but the 1-2, they're gone. Michigan State, Sparty, Tom Izzo, they always are good in March, but I like this K-State team. Keontae Johnson had a horrendous game. Now, defensively, he was fine, but Keontae Johnson could not shoot, and what happened? They found a way to get it done. He hit one of the biggest shots of the game. He didn't shy away from the moment. Keontae Johnson is just a great player all around. He can do it all. Marquise Noel, but the X factor for me is Desi Sills. Desi Sills is that sixth man. He's that J.R. Smith. He's that Jordan Clarkson. He's the guy who's not afraid to take a shot when the shot clock is winding down. He drives hard. Sure, you might want him to go and take that six-foot floater instead of trying yam on two dudes, but it does not matter. He draws the foul. He might get hurt, but he gets back up. He's a ferocious defender. Desi Sills is not afraid. You need those guys. You need those guys in March. And then you have dudes like Tomlin who step up. You have guys like Massad who steps up. K-State is a well-rounded team. I like what they have. And when you have two superstars in Noel and Keontae Johnson, you can get it done in March. I have K-State winning tonight. I know that Michigan State, Tom Izzo, in March, it's tough to pick against them. But I'm going K-State. Fly the purple. KU and Mizzou fans, we're Emaw. Do you have K-State or Michigan State tonight?
I got K-State, man.
Let's go, baby.
I got them in the bracket. I got them. I'm rooting for them. So, naturally, I'm going to bet Michigan State.
Oh, see, it's a smart move. That way you're happy
emotional
either way.
Emotional hedge is what that is.
That's the emotional hedge. And by the way,
Sorry, go ahead.
Just really quickly, I was going to say, the way they played against Kentucky, the way they played against them, I said they won't beat Kentucky because of Oscar Tshiebwe. He's going to get too many rebounds. They'll get dominated down low. And what happened? Those things happened, but they still found a way to win with Keyontae Johnson not having a good game. And that right there gave me hope, saying, you know what? They can get out-rebounded. They can not have the size advantage. They can get beat up down low, and they still have the talent at other positions to get it done. That, to me, was impressive.
Right. So, yeah, and like, I lost a lot of money on the Chiefs Super Bowl run doing this, and so I wouldn't recommend it. But it is a good tactic to win either way if you're a K-State fan out there. And maybe just put like 5 or 10. It's, you know, it's
throw a little bit.
A little bit.
So we both got K-State. Let's go to the second game tonight. Arkansas-UConn. Arkansas with the huge win over Kansas. The Bill Self-less Kansas. But UConn's playing some great basketball. Arkansas, we know, they've been talented all season long. They were a top 10 team heading into this year. Things did not go their way. Eric Musselman, he's been here before. I like Eric Musselman a lot as a head coach. Is he a little over the top? You bet your ass he is. But he can obviously coach. He gets the best out of his players. Him popping his top off, popping the tarp off, throwing his shirt around. A little interesting to say the least. But again, you win a huge game in March.
It's like that meme of that guy that's popping champagne.
Yeah, he's popping champagne.
You know, he's flipping off the crowd and all that stuff, and he's in seventh place.
Yeah, you're in the Sweet 16 right now. You got a ways to go, but it was a big win. Who do you have tonight? Arkansas, UConn.
I got UConn picked even to beat Kansas is what I thought was going to happen. I thought this was where we either – I didn't think we'd get past the Elite Eight. I was worried about this game. I didn't think I had to be worried about Arkansas, and so I saw them on the court. Like,
sure.
The first thing I noticed was they're all the same size. Like, every guy it looks like is the exact same size from center to point guard, which is not a good thing when you're, you know. Anyway, with that logic, it scares me because UConn's really good right now, but Arkansas has a little momentum and great size. I think UConn has good size. I just don't know if across the board, like Arkansas, they have good size.
I'm going with the school that I visited and was able to take a pitcher of beer out of to sneak it out. My friend said, "You can't do it. I've been to college here. I graduated here. I've never seen someone take one of those out before." I said, "Watch me." No, it's not Arkansas. It was UConn.
Hell yeah.
The one time I went to UConn, it was a blast. Their school's in the middle of nowhere. It's wild, actually. Like, you think UConn, you kind of think big school, right? Northeastern school. You think probably a lot of students. Kind of in the middle of nowhere, and there's two bars. It's not like the Midwest. It's not like the SEC. It's very different. It was a shock, but I had a lot of fun, and I was able to steal a picture from there. And because I was able to do that, I'm rolling with the UConn Huskies. I visited Arkansas. Almost went to school there. Not really. I just got in-state tuition. I wasn't going to go to Arkansas. It was Mizzou or bust. But still, we're going to UConn. All right, the evening games. FAU on this magical run. They're 33-3 this year. They know how to win going up against Tennessee. Tennessee, in my opinion, should have lost to Louisiana. Found a way to get it done. I thought they were going to get hammered by Duke. They found a way to get it done. Tennessee's an interesting team. The underlying numbers love them. They love them because of their defense. I can't stand them. They're horrendous to watch. You see them offensively, and it's like you want to gouge your eyes out. But they keep finding ways to win. I don't understand it. But teams, when they play against them, can't shoot. They can't shoot. They'll get open threes, and they're like, "Hey, what's this basketball? Why am I 75 feet away?" And you're like, "Dude, you're only 22 feet. Just shoot it like a normal shot. You've done this thousands, hundreds of thousands of time." And yet they forget how to. So that kind of goes in Tennessee's favor. I don't know if they just confuse them with those, just those, whatever, those warm-ups they wear, those checkered warm-ups. I think that's just drawing the players like, "What are those? It's hurting my eyes." I'm going to go FAU because I can't stand Tennessee, and I think FAU scores enough to beat Tennessee because the first one is 60 probably wins this game.
I'll go FAU in honor of Lane Kiffin using them as a great platform to move upon a, you know, better offer, rebuild himself. So I'm fighting with the ex-Lane Kiffin FAU squad.
Yeah, we're going to go FAU. I just can't stand
really,
Tennessee.
I don't sound like Tennessee either because I picked Duke to beat them.
I did too.
They should have done.
I did too. I thought Louisiana. I had Louisiana beating them too. If you look at the match predictor, 85% or 84.7 on ESPN is Tennessee winning, but we're going to go with the upset. Then the final game, Gonzaga-UCLA, the rematch of the incredible Final Four just a couple years ago. I'm going with the Zags. Give me Gonzaga. Who you got?
Give me UCLA.
Oh, we're going to fight
tonight,
baby.
That's a hard pick.
We're going to come tomorrow. I got a hard Gonzaga tonight.
Oh, yep.
Let's go, baby.
Right,
this is the home stretch here, ESPN Kansas City, joined by Josh Briscoe tomorrow from 3 to 4 p.m. Until tomorrow, go Zags. Go Wildcats. Come on.